This is Countdown to Exegesis, your listen-along Steely Dan podventure. Join me, Andrew Souter.
And me, Ollie Piper, as we explore the Steely Dan discography track by misanthropic track. But wait, there's a twist, a gimmick, a delicious dash of jeopardy.
That's right, because while Ollie has the Steely Dan back catalogue tattooed on the soft side of his soul, I'm new to the Dan and would like to keep it that way.
This means Andrew is hearing every song for the first time. Will he love it? Will he hate it? Should I care? Let's find out.
Exegesis.
Wagada 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 wagada. Well, who knows when this will go out. It's been a long 7, 8, 9 months since we crawled out of the Pretzel Logic cavern. What have you been doing, Andrew, for the last 7, apart from obviously chomping at the bit for more Steely Dan?
Yeah, a lot of chomping.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Well, there was a sort of period immediately after we finished Series 3 of healing. Of self-care and long walks along the beach and you know, bath bombs, that kind of thing. But I still felt quite sad about what my life had become, so I set up a support group called Life Beyond Dan.
Oh
yeah, so I put this advert saying, has your life been ruined by Steely Dan? But nobody came.
Oh, that's a shame. Life Beyond Dan.
Yeah, nobody wanted to know, so I just sat. I sat in the community centre, just eating the biscuits that I'd brought.
Did that maybe give you a bit of clarity about the way forward? In terms of, no one takes Steely Dan hatred quite as seriously as you do.
I guess so, but I just imagine if you had a real problem, like a real problem, and you went along to, you set up a support group for that problem, and then nobody came. Wouldn't you feel even more punishingly alone?
It sounds kind of spiritual. Was there a spiritual leaning with Life Beyond Dan?
It was more about us. The idea was that together we would forge a life beyond Dan. Built out of our own unique sensibilities, experiences.
I would just wonder if you subscribe to the Tibetan Book of the Dan.
Very good. I'm trying to open up here about how life has been over the past 9 months, and you're just making puns. Anyway, how have you been? Because I haven't seen you since the last episode of season 3. I called a few times, but
yeah. Well, you know, when one is so full, so brimming with Dan, there's little you can do except sort of steal a yacht. Cut its moorings and float out to sea on a kind of coke-fueled spiritual journey. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. You know, big rescue team. I owe the Icelandic government tens of thousands of pounds, but you know, I had a good time. And like you, I've been on a bit of a spiritual and self-reflective journey. And
sure,
I'm ready.
We've both been on spiritual self-reflected journeys, but yours was on a yacht, and mine was in King's Heath Community Centre on a like Sunday afternoon, alone. It cost me £80 to hire that room.
It was nothing but me and a cheap MP3 player, with one song loaded on it, which was Doctor Wu, from Katie Lloyd, and you know, just watching the seagulls as I dehydrated. Very happily. What we're discussing today is the first song on Katie Lloyd, which is called Black Friday.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that you haven't yet heard the song?
I haven't heard the song.
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't know if you'd actually go through with that, but Andrew Souter, for the first time, is coming in completely unprepared.
Yeah.
I mean, could have fooled me, but anyway... let's hope that when you listen to the song, you have lots of wonderful things to say off the cuff, so that sure. I'm not, you know, all the big comeback episode isn't, you know, all on me and my tired.
Yeah, it's not a TED self. Talk by Oliver yeah. Piper. Yeah,
but you have prepared. Am I right? Also, in thinking that you have prepared a San Francisco show and tell.
Yeah. So what I've done is I have written and recorded a song which I think is what Black Friday is going to sound like.
I mean, that does sound intriguing. Is your Katie in some way a response to what you think the real Katie might sound like, or is it a little wish on the wind of what you think, of what you hope Katie sounds like?
So this song is what I think the album is going to sound like.
Okay. Great. Let's listen. I'm chomping.
Blood on the turnpike in Santa Fe. Seems I lost my little sweet thing along the way. Mixing margaritas in Montego Bay with the boys from the Moita Room. Debbie took taxis with a sidewalk strut. Frenchies and blueies in the peep show hut. And a sweet South Korean with a bag of nuts selling guns down in old cartoon. Black take your peace to the war. Shots rang out on the Trident floor. Black Friday. It's nothing I ain't seen before. It's a wonder we made it at all. How did I do?
Were you tired by the time you did that solo? I have so much to say. I mean, that sounded like somewhere between Joni Mitchell, the Blue Nile, China Crisis, bit of D'Angelo in there. It was good. It was a good little song, Andrew.
Thank you.
I do think you've overshot Katie Lyde, and I see where your thinking is now, but you've overshot Katie Lyde and ended up somewhere around kind of Fagan solo, maybe Sunken Condos, you're about 40 years out.
Okay, so I've gone too gently R&B infused jazz rock.
I think so, but yeah, I mean, if we're talking classic Dan, that's like, you know, that's kind of a bit gaucho. Or
right,
you know, it's space, it's rhythm, it's, you know, yeah, scattered vocals, backing vocals coming in for a phrase for no reason. That's very gaucho, you know. You've hit on a bit of Dan Future there. Katie Lyde, well, I'll tell you this: at the time of its release, it was not critically or commercially well received, and. Mm. One of the reasons for that is that critics said that it was basically, you know, it's more of the same from Pretzel Logic.
Oh, God. Why? Jesus. I thought the whole fucking thing was that we're finally getting to the stuff that you give a shit about, not another fucking iteration of Pretzel Logic.
Okay, no, but you know, this is what the critics at the time thought. There wasn't an obvious hit, you know. There wasn't like this obvious development, this huge.
You know what this feels like.
Will you let me finish?
You know, it's school and it's the last day of term, and it's like, oh, we can play some games and watch some films.
Yeah,
I feel like I've gone into the last day of term, ready to watch Cool Runnings, let's say. And the teacher's just gone, right, get your textbooks out, page 52, it's time to do some more fucking osmosis. Yeah. That's genuinely what this feels like. It's like, oh, yeah, obviously Katie Lyde is just Pretzel Logic 2. I was like, oh, fuck's sake.
Will you? Yeah, okay. Well, look, it is time to do more of Osmosis of the funky kind. However, I, you know, often when an album comes out, critics are like, more of the same, whatever. Sure. They don't. It hasn't had time to, you know, age, to develop, to gain a mouldy crust.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I see it, if I can just give a little bit of personal opinion, is that Katie Lyde is the crystallization of like the classic Dan sound. So this is what they were kind of tilting at with Pretzel Logic and some bits before, but now we've reached a kind of the crystallization of the classic Dan sound, and it is one of my favorites, and I'm confident you will like it more than Pretzel, which Pretzel, for all its strengths, is a grab bag. This doesn't have the grab bag feel. This feels like a set of songs. I think most of these songs are new. You know, it's not them raiding the songbook in a frenzy.
Yeah.
Because we should mention, of course, they have sacked everyone off except Denny. Yeah, everyone's gone. Skunk left.
Mm.
They sacked Jim. Who else is there? Is it just Denny left?
What about is Katz on board?
Of course, Katz is there throughout, man.
Is he the cornerstone?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and what about Roger Nichols and his gong?
Of course.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So the engineering team are constant.
Yeah, you're always gonna have Katz, you're always gonna have Nichols, at least for classic era, and at the moment the band is Denny and Walter and Fagan.
Okay.
I have a long quote from the liner notes here about that, but I'm not going to read it.
You tease.
let me give you the gist. Basically, in very wordy terms, they didn't like the road, and everyone else liked the road.
Right.
And bandmates felt, quote, that we should get back out on the road as soon as possible and stay there until our very dicks turned green and fell off. That's what they said. So now,
right.
No, Denny, I'm doing the same thing. I'm just waxing, right? But let me just wax a little more. So yeah, band's gone. They're starting to bring in the session players. They're starting to crystallize their MO, which is, you know, it's Beckett, it's Fagan, it's the production staff, and then whoever the fuck can play the best solo on the song. So
right.
This is Jeff Porcaro on drums. You know, this is, if you liked your Porcaro on Pretzel Suitor, this is the Porcaro Dan album, really. He's all over it. But I mean, the great tragedy of all this, Suitor, is that you can no longer make your anti-skunk tirades.
I'm sure I can find a way.
All those mental characters you created to help explain the comic book of Dan have gone. So, you know, there's one more thing to know about the album, and then I will shut my fat trap. There was a screw up with the noise reduction system. Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Classic. This is great pod, right? and they went through all sorts to fix it. They had a special machine made. It made the album sound flat, and as a result, you know, they got it to a point where they felt kind of okay with it, but they were never quite happy with the sound of this album. So just keep that in mind. This is maybe, as a result, you know, you wouldn't know it, but the kind of most lo-fi Dan album, because it lost a bit of sparkle in the mastering stage. For you, you know, that might be a positive thing, because you hate clarity of all kinds.
It's true.
So that's all I'll say. I don't know if you have anything else to say about your frustrations and.
Well, no, I just want to, as I think I've said at the beginning of the last two series, I would like to say to the listeners that I am, I'm going to try.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the blood contract is signed. There is not much.
Yeah.
You can
do
it.
The Faustian pact is pacted. But what I wanted to say was that my Black Friday song. So you were saying I've overshot the music. I've done a kind of late solo Fagan pastiche.
Yeah, this is true. I allowed you no time to explain yourself whatsoever.
No, that's fine. I just want to draw attention to my lyrics, because I thought that that my lyrics might be more on point, because the music was a stab in the dark. I was just like, okay, it's going to be jazzy. There's going to be some jazz chords in there. But the lyrics, I would like to know what you think. So shall I read them to you?
Oh, yeah. I was lost in the groove, so I didn't listen.
Yeah, yeah. Blood on the turnpike in Santa Fe. Seems yeah, I lost...
Sounds, that sounds
Oh, we're going to do it line by line. Okay.
No. But I won't pipe up. Carry on.
Seems I lost my little sweet thang along the way. Mixing margaritas in Montego Bay with the boys from the murder room. How am I doing? Because that, to me, feels right.
There was a bit of Kokomo in there, wasn't there? A bit of, like, 80s Beach Boys.
Yeah, but the boys from the murder room... I can imagine Fagan singing that and thinking he's being sort of noirish.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm picking up on those details.
Okay,
you've done very well.
Next verse. This is where I think it goes wrong. Debbie takes Dexies with a sidewalk strut. Frenchies and blueies in the peep show hut. It's more Lou Reed, isn't it?
It's more Lou Reed, or it's more David Crosby doing Dan.
Okay. And a sweet South Korean with a bag of nuts. Because I thought they'd probably say something that was both creepy towards women and racially insensitive.
I see.
Selling guns down in old Khartoum.
Can I just say, I think honestly what they would do, I'm not saying they wouldn't do what you've just described, but I think they'd probably name her.
Well, that's why I put Debbie in. Debbie takes Dexies.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the chorus is Black Friday, take your peace to the war. Because I was like, yeah, I bet they're going to do a pun. You know, take your peace, like your gun, to the war.
I see, peace.
Take your
war.
Peace to the. Yeah. Shots rang out on the trading floor.
Okay.
Black Friday, it's nothing I ain't seen before.
Yeah.
Because he's a man of the world, you know, he's...
Well, I tell you what, is that what you're considering the chorus? What you've just read?
Well, I haven't finished, but yeah, that's the chorus.
So,
yeah.
All I was going to say is that you are onto something. You are in the ballpark of this song.
Violence and money.
As I'm sure... Well, just with the chorus, the whole Wall Street, the whole character stalking around the trading floor... he knows more than we do. Yeah, there's something in that, as you will hear very soon. But sorry, okay. You haven't finished.
It's a wonder we made it at all. Now, I think that is definitely not, that's not accurate.
I think that's more accurate than some of verse two.
Oh, okay.
The whole, you know, they mention drugs, but they don't have two whole stanzas. Whatever it is, four lines.
Yeah. Okay, and then the burning guitar solo, which you described as tired, was that ballpark?
Again, maybe for Gaucho, it's a bit more. At that point, it's more space. Like I say, more space, more layers, more breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, Becker plays the solo on this one, so take that information and chew on that as you listen.
Okay. Well, interestingly, I still have no idea what to expect from this song.
Great.
So that's fun, I suppose.
I'm like desperate for you to hear it. It seems like you're stalling.
Yeah. Well, before we listen, can I raise one thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I met my friend for a coffee today, and I said to her, we're starting to record the new season of the podcast this evening. And she said, wow, that's so cool. I'm so glad to have you as a friend, such an interesting friend as you. And then she said, have you looked into getting sponsorship or advertising to, in her words, take it to the next level?
Yeah.
So I've got a few ideas for who we could approach for a sponsorship, and I just wanted to...
You really are stalling, aren't you?
But, run them past you.
Do go on.
Okay, so the first... I've got three.
Okay.
So the first one is Batham's Brewery.
Okay. I think that's a recurring name, but yeah, carry on.
So listeners to Series 1 will remember that I was plugging, like, British ales quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Batham's is like a local brewery, local to the Black Country, which is near Birmingham. And they do beautiful beers, lovely bitter, lovely mild.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was, and they have a chain of pubs around the Black Country. And I was thinking, well, if we could get them behind us, then maybe we could do like live Q&As in the Lamp Tavern or wherever, you know.
Sure.
How are you feeling about that as an idea before I move on to number two in my list of three?
There's three of these.
Yeah.
I like Bathams. I don't know what their connection to Steely Dan is, but who cares? You know, if they give us money and feedback,
yeah. Okay, tell you what, because I can see you're eager to listen to the song. So we'll come back to the sponsorship ideas. I'll sprinkle them through the episode.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That works for me.
All right. Let's go then. So.
Get your cans on.
Yeah, here we go.
One day, these questions will be answered in a splendid exegesis.
So my second sponsorship idea. Just a bit of fun.
Yeah, okay.
My question for you, Ollie, is who's that blazing axe man?
It's Walter Becker.
That's Walter Becker. Oh, you did say, didn't you?
I did say.
Yeah. Yeah, and what do you think about the guitar playing? Because I, the reason I ask is because I'm guessing here. I reckon you like this song.
I can't possibly reveal that.
Yeah, the secrets of the Sphinx. I strongly suspect that you think this is a really great song, but I imagine that if that guitar solo was on another band's song, that you would be all sniffy about it. So I'm just curious how you feel about it.
I could take it or leave it.
Okay.
I saw a lot of good words about the guitar playing on this song, especially from Gary Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
Had some nice things to say about it. I think the main solo starts interesting and then kind of becomes like barroom spaff. But
that is a beautiful phrase, Ollie. That's exactly what it is. Barroom spaff.
But you know, in any case,
I'm gonna write that down.
You're getting ahead of yourself. What we have, the opportunity we have here is like finding a crystal in the swamp, right? Because you can give now the purest vibe on first hearing. You can give us the purest spitball vibe of all time. So. Give one to me.
It's like a sort of it's like a boring rock shuffle with like a boring like windy jazz chorus and then some barroom spaff. that's my genuine immediate vibe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can see where this episode's going.
No, because as long-time listeners will know, I'm very very pliable.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I can start an episode hating on something, and by the end of it, I'm having it played at my bath time.
I will tell you right now, I'm probably not going to change your mind about this song.
Oh,
I'm not going to take you on a, but we're going to talk about it, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great pod, everyone listening. My vibe for the record is. Fagan dons Kenny Everett's inflating Rod Stewart arse and floats off for an Antipodean adventure.
What? Well, Antipodean adventure because he mentioned kangaroos.
Yeah.
But why? Kenny Everett was.
There's a few references in there.
Okay.
Do you want me to explain them? Or,
well, yeah, because I didn't.
Kenny Everett, an 80s British. 70s, 80s British DJ and comedian. He did a sketch where he imitated Rod Stewart and his arse inflated as he was strutting around. His arse inflated so much that it eventually, you know, flew off into the sunset.
Right.
So that's it. I can just imagine, like, you know, Rolling Stones videos in the 90s.
Yeah.
Or even Let's Dance. You know, if any song... If they could have done a Let's Dance style video, am I thinking Let's Dance? No, I'm thinking Dancing in the Street. If they could have done a Dancing in the Street style video for any song, it's Black Friday, you know.
Yeah.
Fagan doing his Jagger moves up to the camera When Black Friday falls.
Yeah.
Go right up to the lens. When Black Friday falls.
Yeah. Well, it put me in mind of a few things.
Can you hold those? Can you genuinely hold those thoughts? And
I can try, and but tell, it's been a long day.
And can you write them down?
Sure.
Because I'd love to hear it, but you're forgetting that I've got song facts.
Of course, we have a format.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we do that, can I just mention my second sponsorship idea?
Go on then.
Because this is going to seem like I'm being frivolous, but I've never been more serious in my life.
Sure, yeah, I know you, yeah.
The royal family. Now, the reason I say this is because King Charles III, mm-hmm. when he was Prince of Wales, he used to do a lot of lobbying of government, basically. So he used to write all letters to Tony Blair saying, oh, you need to sort out stuff. And he did this on a range of sort of pet issues, you know, things that he really was really passionate about.
Yeah, he was
about.
Like the Tormentor Prince. Yeah,
he was the Tormentor Prince.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is that if we could get him behind this podcast, he would definitely lobby Rishi Sunak about it.
Yeah.
And that if Rishi Sunak was lobbied about it, Rishi Sunak has no backbone. So he would definitely be like, yes, yes, Your Majesty, of course I will bring this up in PMQs. And then suddenly we're a household name. And it's not that everyone's talking about Steely Dan, it's that everybody's talking about us, you know?
I think it's a great idea. I think you're a bit late. I think if you'd got in there before the Queen snuffed it, you'd be flying. However, he's gonna rein in. In his reign, he will rein in his lobbying, I think. So I think we're a bit late. I think he would have been right on board, old big ears.
Okay. All right, well, yeah. Okay, so I guess we're putting that one to one side for now. But
it's the best idea so far, but...
better than Baitham's Brewery?
Yeah, I don't think it's a goer, yeah.
Okay, unfortunately. All right, okay.
Song facts, I'll rattle through them right quick, okay? This was released as a single, first single off the album. Just cracked the Billboard Top 40 at number 37. That was much better than its follow-up, Bad Sneakers, which I don't know where that was, but it did worse. So there was no hit off this album.
Mm.
This is, you know, I was lamenting the loss of Skunk a while ago. This is the first appearance of another cartoon character for your annals, Michael McDonald.
Oh, was he on this?
Big Snowthroat himself. Yeah, he's. He's on this. He's on the backing vocals. I think he might play some keys as well. Not sure.
Right.
Jeff Porcaro's on drums. Jeff Porcaro threw a tantrum while playing this. He said to Gary Katz, "I'm the wrong guy. You should get Jim Gordon."
Wow. But Jim Gordon, yeah, the was out on his ear.
In Jeff Porcaro's mind, the master of rock shuffle, and he couldn't get it. He walked around the block three times. And then came back into it.
Great story.
William Burroughs listened to this song as part of some magazine feature in the 70s. His first reaction, compare and contrast with yours, was very fancy music. He also said, "These people are too fancy. They're too sophisticated. They're doing too many things at once in a song." And then, referring to his own craft, he said, "To write a bestseller, you can't have too much going on. You take The Godfather, the horse's head. That's great. But you can't have a horse's head on every page. These people tend to have too many horse's heads." You're listening to Countdown to Exegesis, a Patreon-supported podcast. If you enjoy what we do, help us dive further into the Dan discography.
Visit patreon.com/countdowntoexegesis and pledge just £3.50 a month. Not only will you make our little hearts sing, but you'll unlock occasional bonus episodes that cover Dan rarities, Dan adjacent curiosities, and songs that I actually like.
That's patreon.com/countdowntoexegesis. Talk to me. What were the two things you wrote down?
Well, the song that this...
4 minutes ago. To kick off our sparkling discussion. I can feel it coming.
I think we're going to hit some dizzying heights today.
Uh-huh.
The song that it put me most in mind of was Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
Because Bodhisattva is another rock shuffle with a jazzy chorus that opens an album. But I'm not being provocative here. The thought that I had is, yet again, Steely Dan are more workmanlike than their admirers would say. So this was my big takeaway from Pretzel Logic, was that the myth of Steely Dan, as pushed by you and your pro-Dan agenda, is that they're these, like, immaculate gods who never do anything without, like, deep contemplation and EQ and whatever.
I would say I've never said that. I probably have, but yeah.
It's. I would say that's the subtext of what you're saying.
Yeah, sure.
And what's
I won't argue with that.
Whereas Pretzel Logic is like, it seems to me as though a lot of it seemed like conscious filler. You know, like they had to fill up a side, so they were doing these genre exercises and so forth. And it just strikes me as interesting that, again, we're now entering, you know, the reign of Dan, again, according to people like you. But this song is like, within their own catalogue, this song is generic, because this is Bodhisattva Mark II. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that they're a dull band.
Well, let me read from the what might become a recurring feature. Let me read Enemy's Nick Kent's description of Black Friday in his review of the album. Heavily diluted retread is what he said. I don't see it in quite those terms, but I see what he's getting at, and I see what you're getting at as well. They're leaning into something they've done before with Bodhisattva, which is the sort of the pumping rock shuffle opener.
Yeah.
And as we know, you know, Steely Dan doing altered blues or Steely Dan doing blues-influenced shuffle is not my favourite Dan. However, I do think this is a great opener, and I do think it's almost on an equal with Bodhisattva.
Okay.
I think this is a perfectly good, above-average Steely Dan song, and it serves well as an opener, but we haven't hit the heights of
but this
of
is Katie. What you're constantly saying to me is we haven't hit the heights. We've been doing this for like 7 years now and we still haven't hit the heights. When are the heights coming
of Katie? Pretzel Logic is a distant memory now,
and yeah,
you're re-entering a new Dan. What did you think to that mysterious intro? Isn't that nice?
What, the that one?
Yeah, and then the bass kicks in.
Becker and his big fingers.
Groovy riff. Do you like the groovy riff?
You tell me how you feel about this song.
So, if I'm honest, I don't have a lot to say about Black Friday on its own. I think it's good. I think it's a good song.
Okay. So my third sponsorship idea is D'Addario strings.
Oh God, are we really going to talk about guitar strings?
No, let's. Should we do Dan Agony? So our first problem of the series is from our lovely patron, Alex. Alex writes, okay, so, I hope it doesn't break the format, but my recurring Dan Agony is, on a scale from Dreadlock Holiday to that UKIP Calypso song Mike Reed did, how problematic do I need to find Haitian divorce?
I think this is inherent in the question, but the UKIP Calypso song was a very problematic song released by a far-right politician in the UK, just to explain that cultural reference.
Was he a politician?
And of course,
I thought he was a comedian.
Mike Reed.
I think
he was like a. Was he like a radio DJ?
I think Mike Reed was like a 70s comedian.
Okay, well,
and then
whatever.
he performed a racist song at a UKIP convention or something.
Mm-hmm.
For stateside listeners, UKIP are a bunch of cunts.
Okay,
do you want to explain? Dreadlock Holiday. So just to reiterate,
everyone knows Dreadlock Holiday. I don't like reggae. I love it.
Okay.
Etc. One of you be 40's best, in my opinion. That was a joke. I don't really think it was by UB40. I like music and I know a lot about it. As far as I remember, Haitian Divorce is an instrumental, so there's nothing to worry about. There are certainly no questionable lyrics. You know, my memory is flaky, Andrew Suter, but I think it's a harmless instrumental ditty. As far as I recall,
Boris Johnson at the Inquiry. You're wriggling.
We'll have to. When we get to the song on the following album, we will discuss this. If you are looking up the lyrics, then you are a sneaky little man.
Babs and Clean Lily were in love, they said. So in love, the preacher's face turned red. Soon everybody knew the thing was dead. He shouts, she bites, they wrangle through the night, yeah. She go crazy, got to make a getaway. Does he do this in a Jamaican accent?
Well, like I say, as far as I remember...
Does he do it in a Jamaican accent? Because that's really bad.
I think it was the Dan's biggest hit in the UK, that song. You should probably stop reading there for the sake of the format. I mean, not because you'll see anything terrible.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, it's a tricky song, but it's the most problematic of a meaty handful of problematic Dan songs, but sorry, Alex, we'll have to wait until the episode.
I'm dreading that episode.
You are not. You are going to love it. You are going to love it because it's going to be Fagan's head in the stocks, and you're going to have a basket of tomatoes filled with lead at your feet. I don't think we have an awful lot more to say about the music. I do have things to say, but they're really, really boring.
But that's what our listeners are here for.
Yeah, okay. So do you like it how the bass changes its note halfway through the verse, despite it all being built around E, to add a little bit of movement? That's exciting, isn't it?
I didn't notice.
Well, if you listen to it a bit more, maybe you'll notice things like that. Also, the chorus does one of my favourite songwriting tricks, where it starts to bring in chords from outside the key, but then all of those chords have the tonic in them, so the verses are in E, and then the choruses, the chords are all over the place, but they've all got E in them, at least for the first few chords. So it kind of takes you away, but then you're also grounded, so... No...
Yeah. What else you got?
Groovy little tune, that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's another one from Steely Dan. Another groove, another groovy rocker.
Yeah. Taking us into the afternoon, Steely Dan with, what's it called? Black Friday. Yeah. Okay, I want you to tell me what Muswell Brook is.
So, Muswell Brook is a town in Australia.
Okay. Right, I'm not the wiser. I mean, as to what the song is about.
Well, we have that from the shark's mouth. Actually, before I give you the words from the shark's mouth, can I read you a random quote that I found from a 1975 interview with Steely Dan?
Yeah.
this is descriptive flavor text from the journalist. Fagan's enormous rubbery lips folded around the words. Yeah. Fagan's enormous rubbery lips folded around the words like sensuous eels with lives of their own.
No, you're making this up.
Nope, genuinely.
Like sensuous eels with lives of their own?
Yep.
Well, of course eels have lives of their own. Oh, his lips have lives of their own.
Yeah.
His eel-like lips.
It's a bit of a confused metaphor, isn't it? But, yeah.
Hang on, say it again.
What do you think of that?
His enormous rubbery lips.
Fagan's enormous rubbery lips... folded around the words
yeah.
like sensuous eels with lives of their own.
Right, right, okay. So his lips are enormous, they're rubbery, they're like eels, and they have lives of their own.
And they fold.
And they fold.
They fold.
It's very... very description heavy.
Well, you know, for the listeners who are just joining us, of which there'll be thousands, you have described Fagin in the past as old shark mouth.
Yeah.
You had a nightmare with his big shark-like mouth descending on you, plucking you from the earth and flinging you out into the cosmos.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I just thought you'd find it interesting that, you know, someone in the 70s was also taken with Fagin's gob and used aquatic metaphors. Anyway, from the shark's mouth, this is what the song is about. "About the financial crash," says Fagin. Really about the original 1929 crash, but oddly enough, several stock crashes happened not long after it was written. I always liked the guitar work on there. That was Walter, actually. Just to throw in a bit of praise for Walter. But yeah, it's about the financial crash of 1929.
Right. Oh, is that why there's a line about somebody throwing themselves from the 14th floor? Something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Do I have some myths to debunk? Oh, I've got two myths to debunk, one of which is that. But anyway, Musrel Brook, again from, I think, Fagin, because we are talking about a stock market crash, essentially, as we are talking about somebody who wants to get away as far as he possibly could. So we basically just spun a globe, put a finger down, and it happened to be there.
Right.
Because I don't think Musselbrook, as they pronounce it in the town, so say someone on Genius. Anyway, I don't think it's a very big town or anything. It's just a random town in Australia.
Right.
Stick a pin in there in an atlas, and that's where you get. So are you making sense of it now? Is it starting to?
Well, kind of, yeah. I'm getting the mise en scène.
Do you want to listen to the song again?
No, absolutely don't. It'd be great if every time you made a point, you're like, well, I think you're going to have to listen to it again to really, really get what I'm saying. No, I'm just going to get the lyrics up and we can do it that way.
You don't even have the lyrics up, for fuck's sake.
No, I'm using my mind. Are you not impressed that I remembered the thing about the 14th floor? Mm-hmm. Using simply my mind. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's about an acquisitive capitalist. The stock market collapses. He's going to collect everything he's owed, and then he's going to fuck off out of there. He's going to let his buddies on the trading floor sink beneath the catastrophe, but he himself, it's not going to fall on him. He's going to fly down to Australia. He's going to do something with a little black book. He's not going to wear socks or shoes, which seems silly considering how many venomous creatures there are in Australia. He's going to feed the kangaroos because he's far away from home. There are no kangaroos in New York where the stock exchange is. Then he's going to, either at the same time or on a separate occasion, he's going to get into a hole and just sort of put his hands over his ears. He's like, no, I don't. I'm not affected by this. Let other people suffer because he's a bastard, and he'll change his name.
So it's a character study.
I think character is being generous, but sure.
It's a story song. It's a character study. We have some crooked investor or financier. Mm. He's planning something, isn't he? We don't quite know what he's planning, but he knows before anyone else that this big stock market crash is going to happen.
Yeah.
As he says,
I'll collect everything I'm owed, and before my friends find out, I'll be on the road.
So, yeah. You know, he knows. He knows shit. His friends are going to find him out, but by the time they do, he's already barefoot in a kangaroo field.
Yeah.
In Musselbrook. So what is this? I think it's... So if we look back at the sources, like I have done in my research... I think this is a bit of a mishmash. They're inspired by the original Black Friday, which was something that happened in the 1800s and had something to do with gold.
Right.
So I came in like, I've done my research. Basically, I looked at the Wikipedia page and was like, this is financial shit I don't understand.
Right.
But these two conniving people took advantage of something financial related to gold, and then there's a big gold panic, and they profited massively off it.
Right. Basically. Okay. Okay.
So I think it's getting off that, but then we also have imagery, and as we've heard from Fagan, he, you know, they're inspired by the 1929 crash, so we have stuff like
"and catch the grey men when they dive from the 14th floor."
You know, famously, so they say, after the 1929 stock market crash, the traders were jumping out of the windows to end it. I think that's the gist of
That's the gist of it. Can I ask, so the Archbishop's going to sanctify me?
Going to let the world pass by me? The Archbishop's going to sanctify me.
So is that saying that the church and the financial world are in cahoots?
So there's a few parts of this song that I'm basically confused about, and one part is the whole of the verse 3, which is the part which includes the part about the Archbishop.
Right.
Other than that, you know, it's kind of verse 1 sets it up. Oh, everyone's going to commit suicide. La la la, I'm running away.
Yeah.
Verse 2 is like, I'm going to live the life of Riley, who needs socks? Loads of kangaroos around.
Yeah.
And then verse 3 confuses me. So do you want to kind of pick through verse 3 as we go? Because, okay, I'll tell you my thing. I don't know if verse 3 is kind of a germ of, you know, his conscience is talking to him and saying, shall I feel guilty or seek forgiveness for this? Or if he's basically saying...
Just reiterating the second verse.
Well, if he's just kind of saying, I know what I've done is wrong, but I'm basically going to stick my head in the sand.
So basically... Because what I took it to be just a heavily diluted retread of verses 1 and 2. It's like we've already... We've set up that he's a bad man and he's running away. And then it's the same again. He's going to dig himself a hole.
Going to lay down in it till I satisfy my soul.
So it's like, I'm going to put my head in the sand.
How does that correlate to verse 2? Verse 2 sounds really happy. Like, he's full of, like, hope and glory about what he's going to, you know, what he's going to do in Australia.
But he's going to lay down in it until he satisfies his soul. If it was just, I'm going to dig myself a hole and lie there covered in wood lice.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, like, verse 2, to most people, sounds like a good life.
I'm going to do just what I please. I'm going to wear no socks and shoes, with nothing to do but feed all the kangaroos.
Sounds pretty nice, right?
Yeah.
Life of Riley. You've got a lot of money in the bank. You've made some new hoppy friends. no one's going to judge you if you walk around the bush without shoes. Right. Great. That sounds good. How does that correlate with digging a hole and lying in it? Does that to you sound like something you would like to do? You see what I'm saying?
No,
you said it's a retread of verse 2, but that to me sounds like a negative activity.
It's a negative spin on the same. It's a second view of the same thing, isn't it?
When he's bored of the kangaroo.
Well, no,
he's going to try some hole lying.
What I'm saying is, if a financier causes chaos on the markets and then runs off to Australia, from their perspective, they're having a great time dancing around with kangaroos. But from our perspective, they are not facing up to their responsibilities, and they are lying down. They have their head in the sand in their hole.
Yeah. But this is from the narrator's point of view. So some germ of something has.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you're saying that it's like he's gonna absolve himself.
Yeah, I think absolve? Imagine, right. In the movie of this song, or the music video, if you like, Fagan's on the plane.
Yeah.
Not claiming that Fagan is a narrator, but, you know, for the sake of the video, Fagan's on the plane, and these thoughts start to occur, you know, with the long flight and the bad food.
Yeah.
He's had time to kind of, the cogs have started to turn, and he's thought about what he's done and what's about to ensue. And little, you know, little seeds of guilt have been planted in the garden of his mind.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah. No, I
it's multifaceted. is what I'm saying. There are at least two facets.
Very strange look after the word multifaceted. I see what you mean. So, yeah, it's unclear whether we are being given a window into his soul and an inkling of remorse.
The Archbishop's going to sanctify me, and if he don't come across, I'm going to let it roll. What do you make of that, then? That's the one that you, that's the lyric that you brought up originally.
If he don't come across, I'm going to let it roll. Well, I can't think what come across would mean other than pop by.
Okay, I thought you were gonna get into the sex jokes again.
No. This is a serious conversation, Ollie. If you don't come across, as if he doesn't visit me in Australia or visit me in my kangaroo field, then I'm just gonna let it roll. Like I'm gonna.
Oof, this is top tier exegesis.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel I'm really firing on all cylinders with this. This analysis.
Okay. So, dude's fucked off to Australia. Dude is like, I know I'm going to feel bad about this, but basically, I'm going to ignore it. And anyway, the Archbishop, you know, he has the power to go. You are forgiven, son.
Yeah.
So why worry about it anyway? And if the Archbishop doesn't turn up, then fuck it, who cares? I'm happy with our exegesis. I think we've done very well.
What
does he mean by gonna strike all the big red words from my little black book?
I don't know. A little black book is where you put the names of your enemies, isn't it?
I thought it was where you put the names of lovers.
Oh.
I think it is a book of lovers because the song, I think it was a Burt Bacharach song that Love covered.
That's my little red book.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just got out my little red book.
Oh, yeah.
In any case, I think it's a ledger in this case.
Oh, Ollie, you're good. Of course it is. Of course it's a ledger.
Yeah.
And the big red words, it's in the red.
Red means...
It's in the red.
Red means debt, doesn't it?
Red is debt.
He's going to wipe out all his debt.
Right.
Yeah. Have you got anything else to talk about?
I quite like it as a lyric.
Oh, this is good.
I think that the third verse is... it feels a bit like it runs out of steam.
I think the third verse is the best and most interesting bit.
But it's the least clear.
So therefore, it's the best and most interesting bit.
Yeah, but this is because you like plausible deniability in Steely Dan lyrics. I like clarity and wit in Steely Dan lyrics, and you like vague gestures towards cleverness.
I wouldn't call it vague gestures towards cleverness. I'd call it... I don't know what I'd call it. I don't have a vocabulary. That's maybe part of the problem. It's showing and not telling, isn't it? That's what it's doing. Or the other way around. Anyway,
yeah.
It's not giving you the full... It's giving you glimpses, which for me makes for a more sexy silhouette.
Yeah, but I want to see everything.
Hardcore Steely Dan lyricism.
You want the glory hole. I want to just walk right in.
I want the glory hole. Oh, my God. Brian.
Can't Buy a Skull by Brian Rosten. Part 1, Black Friday. The gray men discussed their plans in a dark room with a clock that ticked away the time methodically, as though it knew that the hour was almost at hand. A docket of necessary precautions had been created years ago, and most of the relevant pieces were in place. A few touches needed to be finalized, but things were in motion to an extent that either the plan moved forward and the world was turned on its head, or the gray men's lives would come crashing to a messy and unpleasant halt. In the room, everyone signed a solitary slip of crisp, white paper that created a binding agreement that everyone in the room follow the plans laid out, lest their fortunes be taken from them by a few simple clicks of a keyboard. Everyone's assets were now in the hands of the most complex and impenetrable cloud security system ever devised. It held most of the globe's wealth, and the globe was about to lose most of it. And those who didn't know someone in that room that day were about to find life very difficult. Luckily, Kat and Dean Stevenson knew people in that room. Kat worked for one of the Gray Men as an assistant, and Dean was Kat's sister. Kat had thought about calling Dean to warn him, but also thought about what would happen to her if one of the Gray Men found out she'd done so. So Kat held her hands behind her back, listening to the laughter leaking from the room where the plans were laid, and tried not to cry.
Slam. Or. Scam.
Who can guess who will like the song? It's been a big mystery. Ooh, Jeopardy is the lifeblood of podcasting. And our format.
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't, I hope we haven't given the game away. Andrew Suter, what do you think about this song?
Unfortunately, I'm going to be completely predictable and say that this is a royal scam.
Okay.
I'm not even going to lead you along. It's not that I think it's bad in any way. I just think it's, it's unremarkable, even within the bits of the Dan catalogue that I've heard, you know, like, because it reminds me of Parker's Band and Bodhisattva and other bits of other corners of their albums.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, do you know what I mean? It's not even if I was looking at it purely, even if 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 was the best Steely Dan song and not Blonde on Blonde, it would still be a royal scam because it just reminds me of other things. But I liked some of the, I enjoyed some of the lyrics. They caught my ear, and I sort of liked the guitar, but not enough to listen again.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think that's perfectly fair.
Okay, great. I just worry that I've done what I always do, which is start the series in a very sort of abrasive manner.
If you don't,
and everybody's like, yes, "Oh, cuddly Ollie and Andrew the dickhead." But I'd just like to say to listeners, I'm actually a very, very sensitive person and quite fair-minded at times.
Well, you know, as our patrons know, when you do one of your Andrew's picks, which is where you get to choose a song and I respond to it, the dynamic is completely different. You are sweet and excitable, and you have lots to share.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a sounding board. I bounce off. I'm genuinely interested in what you like and what you have to say. The dynamic's very different when I'm sharing something I enjoy with you,
which is what
most people get to see. If you know, I'm just saying, you know, a few Patreon dollars here and there wouldn't, and you'll see a new side of Suter.
That was a nice stealthy plug. But I guess what I would say is that you're portraying it as though like it's our dynamic. So as in when I'm talking about something I like, I'm all bubbly and tiggerish. Is that what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I get where you're going. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas when you present something you like, I'm all surly and misanthropic.
Eeyore-ish,
you could say. Yeah. But there's in real life, you've played me music and I've been excitable and bubbly. What I'm saying is that the problem...
It just wasn't Steely Dan.
That's what I'm saying, is the problem isn't... what is eliciting my saltiness isn't you, it's the music of Steely Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this happens a lot, but I more or less agree with you in principle.
Yeah.
I think if I didn't like Steely Dan... Or if I liked snippets of Steely Dan and wasn't really sold on the Steely Dan thang as a whole, I probably wouldn't feel great about this song. As it stands, it lands on the side of good for me.
Yeah,
it does its job as an opener. It's a catchy tune. Cool chorus chords. Cool chorus. Cool words. It takes us. You know, Fagan is opening the door of his sports car No, it'd be more like a big, one of those big, you know, road hogging.
What, an SUV?
Yeah, and it, yeah, you know, but an open top SUV, is that a thing, right? And we get in, and he's all it's chugging along, and this song's playing, and he's taking us into Katy, and for that, it does its job. It's the start of a journey. It's not a destination in and of itself. It is a journey, and I think it does that job perfectly well. I think this is like one of the most loved dance songs. I'm not a super solid fan of this one, but it's definitely a real slam.
Okay.
But I say that about all of them, and I should probably only tell you when I think something's a real scam, because otherwise my opinions are basically meaningless.
Mm. Okay. Well, that was one of the most predictable scam or slam sessions in Countdown to Exegesis history. But, maybe we should, next episode, we should just be like, basically, get all the Steely Dan stuff just out of the way. Like 2 to 3 minutes where you're like, yeah, I don't like Steely Dan, but I like some of the songs, but basically I don't like them. This song is boring. What do you think? Yeah, I really like it. It's really good. I really like Steely Dan. Everybody's like, oh, that's nice. And then we just launch into like the fucking, did you ever hear that program, The Moral Maze? You know, where they're it's like a Radio 4 panel show where they talk about like abortion 1 week, and then the next week it's like, Should we invade Libya? And then, you know.
Or we could, those podcasts where they literally like investigate an unsolved crime, an unsolved murder, or something, and like find the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
We could just do that as like
just shake just people put out loads of hours complacency.
into basically solving an unsolved crime.
Well, no, but I like the idea of going like, okay, so this song obviously raises. It's set during the Great Depression of 1929. So what were the causes of the Great Depression? And then we just talk about that for like 2 hours.
Bad Sneakers, don't pretend you haven't heard and liked that song. There's no mystery to next week's episode. You've told people on this very podcast that you like that song. So
no, I told people that I liked that song in a very specific context, which was a tribute band's version of it.
Yeah.
A very dark time in global history. You know, like, it was lockdown. I was looking for stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
In all the wrong places.
And you got it.
I got it. Yeah. All I can remember is it's like bad sneakers and a pina colada, my friend. How it goes?
You've turned it into like an S Club 7 song. when did that happen?
But that's how it goes, isn't it?
Bad sneakers and a pina colada, my friend.
Yeah.
Or like Mambo Number 5 or something. Fucking hell.